Wayne, good morning. Thank you for joining us. I know your schedule's crazy right now, and really appreciate you taking the time to share the excitement around the release of your new book. We're going to get right into it, Wayne. The goal of this call is to share with our listeners as much as possible in the next hour. So let's get right to the point in that there's a conspiracy to murder the middle class. Jumping right into the first question, your newest book is titled The Murder of the Middle Class, How to Save Yourself and Your Family from the Criminal Conspiracy of the Century. It's being released in 3 days on July 14th, with it being available right now for pre-order on Amazon.com. Wayne, what is the background that led you to write this book?
Well, the background is what's happening every second of every day to every person listening to this phone call. And anybody who doesn't see it has to be blind, deaf, or dumb. Or maybe you're so busy working to survive and pay all the bills while you're middle class and under massive attack that you're distracted and you haven't even noticed what's happening. But I'm the guy who's going to point it out to all of America, because people immediately, when they hear the story, immediately nod their head and go, oh, my God, that's it, the murder of the middle class. That's what's happening. Wow, Wayne got it. I mean, everywhere I go for 6 months now, as I was writing this book, I mentioned the name of the book. I mentioned the theme of the book, what's happening. I throw out a couple of stats, which I will for you in a second, and everybody nods their head and goes, oh, my God, you hit the nail on the head. You've got the national bestseller. This is it. You've put your finger on exactly what's happening. We just never thought about it. So when people ask me what is the murder of the middle class, I start by saying it's about how America, the greatest nation in world history, is being destroyed, plundered, and looted by the premeditated murder of the middle class. And it's not an accident. It's not a mistake. It's not a coincidence. It is a purposeful plan. And it's the boldest, grandest criminal conspiracy in world history. And although the man at the center of, after all my research, by the way, there's one man at the center of it all, and it's Barack Obama. However, he's not alone by far. He's just one little piece of it. There are many moving parts. There are many co-conspirators. This conspiracy includes famous billionaire businessmen like Warren Buffett, corporate CEOs, the Federal Reserve, Wall Street bankers, central bankers, government employee unions, the IRS, the EPA, the NSA, National Security Administration, the Bar Association, assorted communists and America haters, and even some well-known Washington, D.C. establishment Republicans. For anyone who thinks this is just an attack on Obama and the Democratic Party, they're wrong. I think there's two horrible parties in this country. I do believe one is worse than the other. I think Obama's been a disaster for the middle class, and he's accelerated what's been happening for 50 years beyond anyone's imagination. He's accelerated it, and the Democratic Party's accelerated it. But Republicans are cowards who let it all happen, so they're really no better. They're all in on the conspiracy. Democrats are purposely trying to implode the middle class because their votes come from the poor and their money comes from the absolute richest people in America, and those are the only two groups that they're trying to help, and everybody else is sacrificial lamb. Republicans, on the other hand, don't have any such intent. They're actually kind of nice guys, and they feel like they're for the middle class, but the only way to get elected is to collect millions in campaign donations. So, Steve, they're collecting them, even Republicans are collecting them, from the richest companies in America, whose goal is to always make sure the tax system is complicated and high so that their lawyers and accountants and lobbyists find a way around it and the rest of us get screwed. And so Republicans don't realize it. It's to them, it might be subconscious. It might be something they're not aiming for. It's not purposeful. But they're doing the same damage to us as the Democrats. They're fighting for big business and the richest people in America, and Democrats are fighting for the poorest and the biggest in America, and no one at all is invested in fighting for the middle. I'm fighting for the middle because I see what's happening. This is kind of like Mel Gibson's movie Braveheart. You know, I mean, that's what this is. I have an entire chapter in my book, The Murder of the Middle Class, called Braveheart. That's what's happening in America today. You've got the British king in Braveheart looking to just destroy and control every ounce of the lives of every Scottish citizen in the movie Braveheart, and then you've got the Scottish noblemen, who I consider the Republican Party. They're supposed to fight the British king, but instead they accept bribes from him. They accept lands and noble titles, and they make, you know, they make sure that they and their children and grandchildren will always be taken care of and be wealthy noblemen, and they agree to look the other way while the king destroys the middle class. That's what's happening in America. Obama's the king, the Democratic Party's destroying the middle class, but the Republicans who claim to be fighting him are actually the noblemen of Scotland, the, you know, the rich class and the noble class of the Scottish people, and every day they scream, "I'm fighting for the people," while they accept titles and million-dollar bribes, so their family's taken care of, and they look the other way, and the middle class is murdered. So this is a repeat of everything that happened 1,000 years ago in the movie Braveheart. And so it's a bad situation, and lies and fraud are the key to all of it, Steve. Lies and fraud. You can't murder the middle class if you tell them the truth. President Obama and all these big government politicians, and I'll repeat again, mostly Democrats, but a lot of Republicans also helping, and a lot of other Republicans cowardly and feckless and therefore doing nothing, they're lying to you. That's their weapon of mass distraction, their WMD. They lie. So here's the lies. This is what the murder of the middle class really is about at its core, is lies. They claim Obamacare is about saving the sick and the uninsured, when the real objective is income redistribution to make the middle class poor and dependent on government. In other words, it's not helping anyone, Obamacare. All it's doing is stealing your money as a middle class person and redistributing it to poor people and then jacking up your health insurance costs through the roof and redistributing it to the richest companies in America to make them and their stockholders rich. But you're getting poor, then you'll be dependent on government, and then you'll vote for the guy who promises to keep the checks coming to help you survive. And these same liars claim environmental regulations and green energy will save us from global warming, when the real objective is simply bankrupting the middle class by doubling and tripling our utility bills, our gas bills, and our grocery bills, once again, making the middle class poor and dependent on government. And they claim immigration reform is about protecting innocent children, when the real objective is to create 12 million new low-wage employees in the labor force that will depress middle-class wages for generations to come and create 12 million future Democratic voters who will always vote for more government and more checks and bigger checks. And so if you have 12 million new low-wage employees in the workforce, guess what that does? That means you, as a middle-class American citizen, will never again have to, you know, never again have a big salary and never again have the ability to ask your boss for a raise, and you'll be lucky if you even have a job because you're fighting in the workplace for 12 million, for jobs with 12 million other competitors who just got legalized, and every one of them is willing to work for much cheaper than you. So this is the dream of big business. That's why they're spending so much money trying to convince both Democrats and Republicans to give amnesty to 12 million illegal aliens and millions more that will follow them and not secure the border. The more people that come into this country poor and dependent on government, the more those big corporations will get rich.
Yeah.
Right? So those are all the lies that you hear. Just like taxes, they claim they're to create equality. No, they're not. They are to literally redistribute income from one group to the one that votes for the other guy. And Obama wants to steal the money of those who make money and run businesses, mostly small businesses, by the way, and he wants to redistribute it to poor people that vote Democrat. Those are the masses that elect Fidel Castro. Those are the masses that elect Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. Those are the masses that elected communist leaders throughout history. They are kept poor by the government, so they'll always be desperate and dependent, and then government promises to keep the checks coming so their children are able to eat, and they vote for the government that does it, not realizing it's all a vicious cycle, and it's being done to them by that government. That's what's happening. They're covering up the real agenda. Last thing I'll say before you jump in with questions, you just need to know about the Fed. The Fed is the real enemy here, and what the Fed does is they print trillions of dollars of fake money, about a trillion two per year. And they sprinkle it on Wall Street to make the biggest donors of Barack Obama incredibly, unimaginably wealthy. But all of it is debt. And while Warren Buffett last year, in 1 year, Steve, made $12.7 billion. Not $12.7 million, $12.7 billion in 1 year because his stocks went up. And his stocks went up because the Federal Reserve fixed the system. It's a crooked craps game. He knew he couldn't lose because they were putting $1 trillion, and it all found its way to Wall Street and the biggest companies in America. So they're just enriching bankers, Wall Street, and billionaires like Warren Buffett. And with billions, and then you, the middle class, owe the money back in debt. Warren Buffett's 80-something years old. He'll be dead in 5 years. But your children and grandchildren owe that $12.7 billion that's in his estate extra that he made in 1 year? You owe it back, folks. It's debt. He got rich, and you got left holding the bag. That's the murder of the middle class, and it's happening every single day. And to bring the point home, my book tour starts on Monday, July 14th, just 3 days from now as we make this recording, and I just got the notice in the mail 2 days ago. My health insurance was canceled. Canceled. Gone. My family of six will have no health insurance unless I go find another one. And when Obama became president, my bill was $500 a month for a family of six to pay for health insurance. As of today, it's $1,700 a month, $1,700 per month from $500 per month. Barack Obama promised our rates would go down, an average of $2,500 a year per family, and yet the truth is, average American, it's gone up $3,000 per year until Obamacare took effect. And then once Obamacare took effect, we've had higher premium increases than in the 8 years previous combined. So now it's probably up $5,000 to $7,000 per family per year when he said it would go down $2,500, and now I've actually lost my insurance. I don't have any. And I'm betting you, Steve, that when I go try and get a new policy, they're gonna say it's $2,500 a month or it's $3,000 a month. This is the murder of the middle class. No one could pay that bill. It's not possible to pay a bill like that on a middle-class income. So they don't care what my income is. You don't get charged health insurance based on income. So if I made $30,000 a year and I have a family of six and I go ask them for a new policy and they say, sorry, it's not $1,700 a month anymore, it's $2,500, you do the math, that's almost $30,000 a year. How would I pay for that if I only make $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 a year? Well, I'm going to need free health care from the government. Once you get free health care from the government, you're hooked like a drug addict. That's the point of all of this. They want you hooked on government like a drug dealer wants you hooked on cocaine.
Breaking this down, what I'd like to do is go back to a period of time that you mentioned in the book where we did not have this economic murdering of the middle class. Now is the period you mentioned from the end of the Civil War, which is roughly 1865, to 1913. What was different then?
Well, we had no income tax. We didn't have any of the government regulations we have now. We didn't have any of the big government we have now. We didn't have the Federal Reserve. I mean, the greatest period of prosperity in the history of America coincided with a period with smaller government, no Federal Reserve, and no income taxes. That's the formula to save America now, you know? Smaller government, no Fed, and hopefully lower, if not no income taxes, certainly lower income taxes, less regulation, less government spending. That's the formula for success. If you look through history, there's certain things that are poison to the middle class. Debt, taxes, spending, regulations, big government and bureaucracy like the IRS. Now you look at Barack Obama, the president we have now. He's the biggest taxer in the history of the world, and I have all the facts to back it up in the book, the biggest spender in the history of the world, the biggest regulator with the most regulations in the history of the world, the biggest debt creator in the history of the world, and lastly, biggest bureaucracy creator with the IRS. So all the five things that are absolute poison to the middle class and a good economy and good jobs are all, you know, exactly what Obama is about. And that's why the middle class is being murdered. Now, is this just a Democratic issue? No. I've made it clear. It's like the movie Braveheart. It's Republicans and Democrats basically working together. You know, one of my favorite authors is Robert Ringer. I don't know if you know Robert Ringer, Steve. He wrote, you know him? Okay,
yeah,
Robert is a friend of mine.
Yeah, very
he, wrote,
well, yeah.
he's a great guy, and we became good friends, but I didn't know him when I was reading his books in the 1970s and 1980s. I only met him about 5 years ago, and we became fast friends, and I told him, you're my favorite author of all time. And Robert had a book called Winning Through Intimidation. I believe it went to number one on the New York Times bestseller list. He became fabulously wealthy and famous in the 1970s. And it was given to me as my graduation gift from high school. And I read that book and treasured it for so many years. And there was basically a theory in that book. There's two kinds of people in the world, he says. One kind is evil, and they're out to destroy you. And the other kind is nice. They're not evil at all. They're nice, and they have only good thoughts for you and good intentions. And somehow, some way, they wind up hurting you more than the ones who are evil that want to destroy you. So you have to know how difficult life is to overcome this. You got to understand everyone you meet is in one of those two groups, and yet they're both going to wind up hurting you unless you're really careful and understand that. And so I always thought that was really funny. Well, now I see it played out in politics. Democrats are this evil party that's out to destroy the country and bury us in debt and make everyone dependent on government. And Republicans are really nice. They're not evil. They mean well. But through the circumstances of life, even though they're nice, they may be even worse for you. So you're dealing with these two parties, and they're both poison. The Republicans are cowards and feckless and pathetic. And so they won't stand up to Barack Obama, and they won't stand up to big business who gives them all their checks. So they wind up hurting you just as bad as the ones who have actual evil intent. It's pretty sad. It really is. But that's the way it's going right now.
I really want to get deeper, which is, you know, at the core of what's behind all of this, because as you mentioned earlier, you know, Barack is just one person. Now, he happens to be the president, so it's not just any person, but it goes deeper. But before we do that, going back to 1913, what shifts began to happen at that point that resulted in this decline? Because apparently, you know, you mentioned 1913 as being the end of this most prosperous era. So what began to happen then? Because something was pivotal at that point.
Yeah, it's the end of the most prosperous era and the beginning of the disastrous era, and it same thing coincided. It was the beginning of the Fed. 1913 is when the Fed was created, and 1913 was when the income tax was created. Until then, the income tax was zero. Can you imagine, folks? You kept everything you made. And all of a sudden, government got so big and so voracious and so greedy, it decided it was owed a large portion of what you make. And, of course, as it always does with government and lying politicians, it started with, you know, I think it was like a 2% income tax. And it was only on the richest people. 98% of everyone paid zero, and the top 2% paid about 2% of what they made. And they promised everyone it would never get bigger. And very quickly, it got much bigger. As a matter of fact, once we got Hoover as president, I believe he raised the top income tax rate to 65% and applied it to almost everybody. So can you imagine it went from 2% paying 2% to almost everybody paying 65%? And you wonder why we had a Great Depression. And regulations got bigger, and government got bigger, and spending got bigger. And how about the Fed? The Fed was founded in 1913 with one goal in mind, and only one goal: protect the value of the dollar. And then secondary to that would be make sure there's full employment in the United States and make sure the economy is running smoothly. Well, they failed miserably at every one of those, and all the facts and the stats are in my new book, The Murder of the Middle Class. You'll find them. But the Fed is just a complete disaster, and its number one goal, protect the value of the dollar, and the dollar's down by 98% since 1913.
Wayne, is that a public goal? Because when you start really looking behind the scenes as to the structure of the Fed, and there's stories about who really owns the Fed, do you think that was a public goal and really there was another agenda?
I don't know. The only agenda I think they've got, to be honest with you, and again, these are all, you know, just educated guesses, but my educated guesses have been proved pretty well over the years. I got a pretty good track record with educated guesses, and I think the Fed is just a tool of the richest men in the world. And
that's
the
exactly
richest billionaires,
right,
the most powerful men and women. They don't care about anything except making sure that those powerful men and women, but it's 99% men, who run the biggest corporations and empires in the world, remain very fabulously rich and much richer than the rest of us. That's their only real goal. Now, if that coincides with helping the middle class, they'd be glad to do it. If that coincides with murdering the middle class, they're glad to do it. it doesn't really matter to them. So there were times in the last 100 years, or 101 years since 1913, there were times where the Fed's goals worked well, Fed's actions worked well, and other times where the Fed's actions worked badly for the middle class. But I guarantee you, Steve, they always worked well for Warren Buffett and the richest billionaires in America. That's their only real goal. But the dollar really is, factually, down 98% in buying power. So if you had $1 million when the Fed came into existence in 1913, today that's worth $20,000 in buying power. $1 million is worth $20,000. If you had $1 million of gold in 1913, give or take a few dollars, it's worth over $60 million today. So if you kept your million in dollars, you're worth $20,000. You kept your million in gold, you're worth $60 million. That's a 100-year track record of incredible success for gold and incredible failure for the dollar. And yet when you tune into CNBC, you hear nothing but lies. They tell you all day long, invest in the dollar, invest in bonds, invest in America. It's safe, it's safe, it's safe. It only goes up, and the more it goes down, you should buy more. Oh, gold? Never. You should never buy gold. Gold is risky. Gold doesn't earn anything. Gold is bad. Gold is fool's gold. You hear those two theories every day from almost every person talking in the media, but particularly at financial channels like CNBC. And so there is a conspiracy. There is a murder of the middle class. They're all lying to you. I just gave you the facts. Would you rather have 20,000 or 60 million? If you listen to CNBC's experts, you'd have 20,000. If you listen to me, you'd have 60 million. So gold is a great example of what the middle class can do to save themselves. Not, you know, I don't worry about whether gold goes up today, this hour, this morning, this week, this month, this year. I worry about long term, and I got a 101 year track record to prove that $1 million is worth $60 million 101 years later if you invest in gold versus 20,000 if you invest in the famous, fantastic, you can never lose U.S. dollar.
Wayne, you're on the call this morning because I totally align with everything that you talk about, write about, and espouse. That's certainly not always the case, as evidenced by one of your part of your life story, which is you attended Columbia University. You talked about attending Columbia University at the same time as Barack Obama. You mentioned that the influence on most of the people there by the professors and the books and papers that they were assigned to study and read, which is really opposite of what you believe in. How did that happen? How did you remain, or how did you develop into such a libertarian, freedom fighter, patriot person when you were attending Columbia at the same time that had the opposite influence on so many people?
Well, I'm gonna turn your question around a little bit because I don't think it really matters how I became a conservative or how I remained a capitalist and a patriot who loves America. I think what matters is what people were taught at Columbia when I was there. That's the important thing all of you need to know. That's why you know this is not a mistake. It's a purposeful plan because I was there when the plan was created. There were two Columbia professors named Cloward and Piven. This was in the 1970s at Columbia, 1960s and 70s, by the way. They were there. And then they left as a husband-wife team. They left and went to NYU. By the time I got to Columbia in 1979, they were actually gone. But we talked about their plan all the time, both in class and out of class. The students knew the plan. The teachers taught the plan. We all talked about it. We also talked about Saul Alinsky and his book, Rules for Radicals, the Communist Manifesto by Karl Marx. We studied all of those at Columbia and talked about them long into the night with amongst friends and students and classmates. And basically what everybody said at the time, and I was a young, ambitious son of a butcher, who expected to become a millionaire one day because I knew America was great and I knew capitalism worked and I knew the American dream worked. But my classmates were not at all like me. They were all rich kids. They weren't sons of butchers. They were sons of billionaires and millionaires, and they had been raised in complete abject, not poverty, but abject, incredible wealth and spoiled bratness. And so they went to the best prep schools. They'd gotten everything they ever wanted their entire lives. I mean, you talk about polar opposite of my life, and they believed the polar opposite of me. They didn't believe how great America was, I guess because they had what some would term guilt about their incredible wealth and the fact that everything had been served to them on a silver platter their whole life. They were all guilty, and they hated America, and they hated capitalism, and they hated the system, and they wanted to destroy it. And they mostly hated rich white people, even though almost all my classmates were white. They had an incredible self-hate for white people. It was the strangest thing I'd ever been around in my entire life. And they all vowed that they would elect people who would destroy the system, take it down, and make it more equal. You know, the equality. There's that word Obama uses all the time. Equality and inequality and fairness and social justice. I heard those words 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at Columbia until I wanted to throw up, you know. And it was just amazing to me because I thought America was incredibly just and fair, and there was plenty of social justice because my grandfather died in the poor ward of a Brooklyn hospital. But his son, my dad, David Root, owned his own business. I thought America was pretty fair. And my other grandfather didn't die in a poor ward. He came to America without one penny, worked for 30 years for nothing, but saved up enough money to start his own butcher store, and he actually became fairly wealthy. So there's two different stories. My dad wasn't wealthy, but he was a middle-class small business owner, and my grandfather was actually fairly wealthy, certainly upper middle class, when he started with nothing. So isn't America great? There's plenty of mobility. There's plenty of opportunity. I couldn't understand what any of these kids were talking about. They could buy and sell my family 100 times over, including my grandfather, because he was only, you know, wealthy by small businessman standards. He owned a little butcher store and a nice house, and he bought a new car every 3 years, and I thought that was pretty damn good. I thought that was wealthy. The kids I met at Columbia were incredibly wealthy. I went home to visit their families. Whether it's girls I was dating or guys I was best friends with, I'd go home with them for a couple of days on a weekend. They all lived in mansions. It was like out of the Great Gatsby, mansions on Long Island overlooking the ocean. And they had servants. I'd never seen anything like this. And they hated America. And they hated rich people. And they wanted to bring down capitalism. And they all vowed, Steve, they'd use the Cloward Piven system to overwhelm the country, overwhelm the economy, and destroy it with debt and spending and taxes and entitlements. And that's exactly what's going on right now in America. And being that Barack Obama was my classmate, and almost every classmate I ever had is either in the government or the media with Barack Obama on his side, that's why America's going downhill fast. There it is right there. This is a purposeful plan. I saw it with my own eyes. I heard it with my own ears. And they have implemented it in America today. And the media is covering up for Obama because they were his classmates and they had the exact same views as he did. They wanted to destroy America, so they like what he's doing.
Wayne, let's take the major statistics, because you cite a lot of data in your book, which is fantastic. But I'd like all our listeners to really understand some of the data that backs up your point that the middle class is being murdered. So give us some of those key stats.
Sure. There's so many of them. It's, you know, in my book, there are hundreds and hundreds of them. I'll just give you a few highlights as we speak. For the first time in history, well, or first time in modern history, certainly since 1872, China is set to pass America as the world's number one economy. That's based on consumer spending. They're going to pass us this year. 1872 was the last time America was not the number one economy in the world. We passed England in that year, 1872. Never looked back. All of a sudden, it's all gone downhill. For the first time in history, America's middle class isn't number one in the world. Canada's middle class has passed us. For the first time in history, more businesses are closing every day than starting. There are now 70% more Americans collecting entitlement checks than working in the private sector. The average full-time male employee now earns less. I think, and this time my hand literally just brushed against my phone, the headset, and the phone disconnected. Sorry about that. I've never done
that
before.
Okay, a lot of energy flowing. Keep going.
Well, yeah, my hands were flying, and they just happened to hit my phone. Sorry about that. So for the first time in history, more businesses closing than starting up. There are now 70% more Americans collecting entitlement checks than working in the private sector. And, folks, by the way, let me expound on that before I get to the next stat. That number just can't work. In the history of the world, it's never worked. You know, just roughly, let me give you a very rough breakdown. There's about 300 million Americans. To be exact, I think it's 317 million now. But let's just round it out to 300 million. There's about 100 million working, not even, 80 million are working in the private sector. And there's about 100 million who are either young people too young to work or old people retired and too old to work. And then there's 100 million on entitlements, getting checks and refusing to work. That's the breakdown of America. So 100 million won't work, and they live on checks. 100 million can't work. They're too old or too young. And about 100 million are working, 80 million of them in the private sector, and 20 million work for government. It's actually 22 million to be exact, but I just like to round the numbers off. In the history of the world, that kind of a scenario has never worked. You got 20 million people collecting government checks because they work for government, and 100 million people collecting government checks because they refuse to work, and 100 million more we have to support because they're too young or too old to work. And who's supporting all of them? 80 million people in the private sector, and that's why Obama keeps raising your taxes, because there's no way to make this scenario work until they take every inch of your money, every dollar and every cent. And if it was all stolen from you, they'd only be able to pull the Ponzi scheme off and expand it for another couple of years, and then they'd run out of money again, because all the money that you earn, if they took 100%, it wouldn't keep the scheme going for another 20 years. So that's how bad the situation is.
I want you to talk more about statistics, but on this particular point, relate what you just said to the misinformation, the lies, the fraud on the unemployment rate and trends that's published every quarter.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because that's a very good point. You know, first of all, this past unemployment report or jobs report, you know, a lot of different terms they use for it, same thing. This past jobs report, the media lied again and scammed you, tried to convince you it was a good jobs report. And it's not. First of all, 92 million Americans are working age, not working. So that's my stat where there's almost 100 million people collecting entitlements and refusing to work. 92 million are working age and don't work. So for the government to say last month 288,000 new jobs are created, happy days are here again, that's pretty misleading, because you got 92 million people that need a job, and you've only added 288,000 last month. I don't think that's a good number. Number two, it's not a lie. There were 288,000 jobs created last month, but the media just didn't bother to tell anyone the breakdown of those jobs. 520,000 full-time jobs were lost last month. Good-paying middle-class jobs gone forever. 800,000 part-time crappy jobs were created. That's the Obama economy, folks. If you're middle class and you want a good job, good luck, because 800,000 part-time jobs became available, 520,000 full-time jobs disappeared. And that's a net of a positive 288. That's where the number came from. I don't know about you, Steve, but that's a terrible number. I don't want a part-time job. I don't want to work at McDonald's with no health insurance and the government paying for my Obamacare. So if that's the kind of job you want, good luck, because that's all that's being created in this socialist society that we've created under Barack Obama, and that's why socialism doesn't work. And then one more thing needs to be said. The unemployment rate went down from 6.3 to 6.1, and the media trumpeted that as good news. The only reason the rate went down, folks, is because several hundred thousand people dropped out of the workforce forevermore, never to look for a job again, probably to join the welfare ranks, the food stamp ranks, or the disability ranks, or maybe even Social Security and Medicare. An awful lot of people each month turn 64, 65, 66, and they just say, I'm never going to get another job. I'm just going to quit and go on go on Social Security the rest of my life. So either they're young and they're going on welfare, or they're old and they're going on Social Security and Medicare. But either way, who's going to pay for it all? Country going broke. Middle class getting murdered.
So what do you think the true unemployment rate is? Because I'm reading different statistics, anywhere from 15.7 to 22.2. What do you think the real number is?
Well, John Williams of Shadow Stats is probably the brightest economist in the country when it comes to jobs and unemployment. He is just brilliant, and everyone I know who's a brilliant guy in the business world uses John Williams' stats and goes to his website shadowstats.com, and John Williams believes our unemployment combined with underemployment. So in other words, anyone who went to college and is now working at McDonald's, he's using them as underemployed. If you went to college, you should be working a low-wage job. When you add those together and you add in all the people who've dropped off the workforce and are working age and aren't working anymore, you've got an unemployment rate for basically the entire 6 years of Obama of in the 20% range. Well, guess what, folks?
Right.
That's higher than in almost every year of the Great Depression but one. So we're in a Great Depression, but the media won't tell you. We're in a Great Depression right now. If you told the real truth about inflation, we're in a Great Depression. If you told the real truth about jobs and unemployment, we're in a Great Depression. If you didn't have food stamps disguised as a credit card, you know, an EBD card now, instead of people getting food stamps, they get a credit card in the mail, and they just put their food stamp money each month on the credit card. You swipe it at the supermarket, and nobody knows if you're using a Visa card or you're using a welfare card. So people aren't even embarrassed to accept welfare and food stamps anymore. It's become a way of life. If you took away their food stamps, their welfare, their disability, their unemployment benefits, all the things that government provides, and now the free health care, Steve, the whole country would be on food lines and living in tent cities, and it would look like the Great Depression. It's all being hidden by government spending, which is provided by debt that middle-class kids and grandkids who aren't even born yet have to pay back.
Okay, so this picture is very consistent with the view of a socialist environment. You mentioned a number of different groups in your book that have socialist agendas. One of them, what you refer to as environmental Nazis. Tell us your view of what the extreme environmentalism is and your suggestions for a more balanced approach and why.
Well, I mean, first of all, let me state that nobody wants clean air and clean water more than me, and I believe pretty much everyone who thinks like me wants clean air and water. No one wants to breathe filthy air and swim in filthy water, and we don't want our kids to do that either. I'm one of the most dedicated recyclers you've ever met in your life. I mean, not a single piece of plastic or glass or paper in my house ever goes in the regular garbage. I'm very careful. For 25 years now, I've been recycling like a, you know, completely dedicated recyclist, like a liberal. And so I want to leave my kids a better world and a better nation and a cleaner nation as well. But that doesn't mean I want to destroy them. I think the best way to explain this is to not, you know, we don't have hours here, and I could take hours and explain how global warming doesn't exist. And if it does exist in a small way, it certainly isn't caused by man. And I've got all the facts to back it up. We could put, you know, open my book, Murder of the Middle Class, you'll see all those stats. I'd rather explain to you that even if liberals and the left and socialists and Obama are correct and there is global warming and there is climate change and it is caused by man, let's assume they're right about everything. Well, then the cure is worse than the disease, because I don't think a common cold should be cured by chemotherapy. And the things that they propose, the EPA, making coal extinct and stopping oil drilling and offshore drilling and fracking and nuclear facilities to store the waste and new plants to create and to, you know, cycle through the gasoline and the oil, you know, all of this needs facilities. We haven't built a new facility in the United States since the 1970s. Can't get a permit. So when you add it up, and you take a look at Europe, Steve, Spain is the biggest green energy country in the world. They turned their entire economy into the green energy capital of Europe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, actually. And guess what? They ruined their economy, destroyed. And a think tank did a study, and they found it's pretty simple. Why? For every one green energy job you create, you destroy 2.3 in the real economy. So every time you create a job, you destroy 2.3 jobs. So there are no good jobs from green energy. There's lost jobs from green energy. So the cure is worse than the disease. No, I don't want polluted air and water, but I also don't want the entire country converted to green energy, because that's wind power and that's solar power. It's completely, disastrously bankrupting to a nation. It's unaffordable. So Europe has been destroyed and decimated. Their economy is dead. Spain's been destroyed and decimated. Their economy is dead. 28% unemployment rate. That's the reported rate. I'm sure, just like America, it's underreported by the governments. It's probably really in the range of 40 to 50% unemployment. And the reported unemployment rate in Spain for young people is 58%, folks. And that's what you get with a green economy, destruction. So in America, if you think, you know, we have climate change and the world is terrible and you want to institute all these draconian EPA regulations, You may make it a cleaner nation, but are you ready to take your $200 a month electric bill and hike it up to $1,000? How are you going to pay it? Are you ready to pay $9 a gallon for gas? How are you going to pay it? How about your gas bill for heating your house, separate from the electric bill? $200 a month, $100 a month you're paying now? Might as well get ready for $1,000 a month. Might as well get ready to ride bicycles because your car is going to be unaffordable. It just can't work, Steve. That's all it comes down to. Europe proves it doesn't work, and if you need any more proof, just look at the fact they were the first, Europe, the EU, to institute greenhouse gas standards, the same ones Obama is trying to push through in America right now. They so bankrupted the European economy and destroyed jobs that Europe just undid those regulations. They're gone. Nobody needs to adhere to them anymore because they decimated the economy. And at the moment that's happening, Obama is lying to you and omitting the fact that it happened and telling you we have to put those same regulations in, even though they've been proven to destroy our friends in Europe. That's crazy. It doesn't work. This is the murder of the middle class, making you poor and dependent on government to survive.
So Wayne, you work with leaders of business and government. I work with leaders in business, small business owners, and so do you. When we look at a problem in an organization, we always start with what's happening at the top and the policies. So with respect to policy and energy, I don't see any evidence at all that this country has a policy of being self-sufficient, energy independent. Do you?
Well, no, but ironically, see, there's always truth in lies. Barack Obama in the debates actually said that, you know, oil permit drilling for oil is the highest it's ever been. Well, that was the truth, but it's a total lie. You see, how could it be both the truth and a lie? Government drilling permits are way, 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 way down. You just can't get this government to give you permission to drill. Drilling on private property where you don't need a government permit, way, 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 way up. So we're not getting any energy relief from the government. We're getting destroyed and decimated by the government. We have an energy revolution going on in America if only the government would get out of the way. It now turns out through all kinds of new technology, primarily fracking, we have more energy in this country, wow, than any country in the entire world. We can become the world's number one energy provider if Obama and his socialist green energy environmental Nazis would just get out of the way. And that would create such prosperity, it would make your head spin. Do you know that the only state in the entire country besides, the only place besides Washington, D.C., that is enjoying prosperity in America, and Washington enjoys it because they steal your tax money and they create more and more government jobs at obscene prices and obscene pensions. But outside of Washington, only one state has enjoyed fantastic success in the last seven horrible years of this Great Depression. And that one state is Texas. And Texas has zero state income taxes, interestingly enough. They have very few regulations, much lower than the rest of the country. Very few lawyers, lower than the rest of the country, another good thing. And Texas has lots of oil jobs. The average energy job in Texas pays about $150,000 a year. So when you talk about good middle-class jobs, that's oil jobs, folks. That's energy jobs. $150,000 a year is the average income from those jobs. Yet Barack Obama works hard every day, and this government works hard every day, and environmental Nazis, I call them, work hard every day to destroy those good-paying middle-class jobs and try and create nothing but government stealing taxpayer money and handing it to green energy companies to try something that's already proven as a failure in Europe, solar power, wind power, biofuels. None of it works. It can't work without stealing taxpayer money. It needs to be subsidized because it loses like 90 cents of every dollar you put in it.
Wayne, this next question is not directly spoken about it or written about it in your book, but I'm really, really curious about it because knowing you're from Nevada, knowing your point of view, anybody that pays attention to you for more than 5 minutes knows where you stand. So I have this impression of Nevada being this great state in support of freedom and liberty, but this state has succeeded in
perpetuating the office of Harry Reid since 1986, I believe. How is that possible?
Well, Nevada's been Californicated, Steve. You know, we have a million new residents, and California's lost a million residents in the last 10 years. Why did a million people run for their lives away from California, and why did a million new people come to Nevada and make us the fastest-growing state in the entire United States for 7 decades in a row, by the way? Why? Because they're all running from California's taxes and regulations and spending and the size of government and the unaffordability of life in California because of all of that. Socialism makes it impossible for middle-class people to survive. And where do they go? They go to Nevada, where they can survive because we're not a socialist state. And what do they do when they get here? They're idiots. They vote for the exact same people and policies that bankrupted California and made it impossible to live in the first place. They vote Democrat, like they did as a pattern their whole lives in California, and they don't even realize they ruined their own lives. Now they're coming to Nevada, and they vote for Harry Reid to ruin our lives again. So that's one of the main reasons. And second of all, of course, Nevada has the same issue as California. You know, millions and millions of illegal aliens are coming into this country from countries like Mexico and Central America, which are all basically socialist economies, and they believe in socialism, and they come here, and they vote for socialists, i.e. Democrats. The minute they get here, they vote for food stamps and welfare and free education and free food and meals at school and free everything they could possibly get their hands on because they believe in socialism, and they've been poor their whole lives and conditioned to believe it's the government's job to take care of them. And California and Nevada are both flooded with illegal immigrants from the countries that are socialist, and they come here and they vote socialist. That's why this is all happening.
Thank you. Okay, so we have a few more minutes, and I'm going to eliminate a couple questions. It would take a lot longer than that. But I'll ask you one more question, and then I want to talk about the book. So one more question would be this. Our country has a foundation named our Constitution. We have the principles of the Declaration of Independence. We have safeguards to protect against a dictatorship or a federal government out of control. How is it that the people of this country are being so controlled that they don't think, that they don't stand up and say, you know, enough is enough, and implement the safeguards that are already built into our system?
Well, I think it's because the liberal left and the socialists came up with a game plan about 100 years ago. It was to tax the middle class to death, regulate the middle class to death, and also to educate their children. And they've just completely infiltrated and taken over the education system of this country. Nobody can debate what I'm saying because studies are out that show that 95% of all college professors in America are registered Democrats, 95%. And guess what? I think the other 3% are independents and 1% are Republicans. That's
wow.
How bad it is. One party, one group rules the entire American education system, and they've brainwashed and dumbed down generation after generation to the point where people don't even know what socialism is. People don't know when they're being taken advantage of. People don't understand when they're being held down. And people do not understand the U.S. Constitution or when it's being violated. They've been taught that it's okay to violate it. It's got to be some sort of moving document that as the times change, you can change the Constitution anytime you want. And the president, anytime he wants, with an executive order, can do whatever he wants, and he can overrule the Constitution. Well, they've been taught lies. That's not the case. The Constitution is set in stone. It's got nothing to do with time. We're supposed to be a limited government, small government, power to the people, country, and that's never supposed to change. And we've got a lot of elite criminals, basically, who are trying to lie and deceive the people and teach them the wrong information. So that's why that's happening, Steve. But, you know, in the little time we have left, how much time we have left, Steve?
Just about 5 minutes, Wayne.
5 minutes, and the little time that's left. Let's just mention my book, The Murder of the Middle Class, is not just a dark book, okay? It's not a dark book that literally, is a terrible thing, yeah. And scares you and makes you depressed. It's 400 pages. It's about 200 pages telling you why this is happening and how it's happening and who's doing it to you. And then it's another second half of the book, 200 pages, half of my book, is solutions to save America, save the middle class, save capitalism, save the individual just for you to save your family ideas and save the Republican Party, because I think that's the only vehicle at this point that could possibly gain power and save America. And I teach all of them how to save themselves with some really unique ideas. And as we make this recording, I was just a guest on John Stossel's show, Stossel, on Fox last night. It was taped, so it's going to be on next Thursday. Next Thursday, let's see, Monday's the 14th, so the 17th. Next Thursday, the 17th of July, you could tune into Fox Business and watch Stossel and see my appearance, and then it'll repeat that weekend on Fox News. So millions of people will get to see my appearance. I took over the show. I had the audience screaming, the audience cheering, the audience going nuts with my idea for a national income tax vacation. That government has clearly failed the people and failed the economy. And the more you look to government, the worse it gets. So let's go back to the Constitution and let's give the power and the money to the people. What we need is a radical concept to turn the economy around, because it's that bad. You got to shock the system like a defibrillator. And I think that's a national income tax vacation. And so for 1 year, I'm proposing the American people keep all of their own money. 100% of what you make, you get to keep. You don't give a thing to Uncle Sam. It's your money to do what you want. And you know what people are going to do with it, Steve? They're going to use that money to start businesses or expand businesses and hire people, and millions of jobs will be created, and you will have the biggest economic turnaround in history. And then when you come back from that, I've got my middle-class contract with America and my 0-15-0 tax plan, all of which will create a massive economic expansion and millions of new middle-class jobs, good-paying middle-class jobs. My book is full of fantastic solutions to save this country. It's not a depressing book, but you have to know what you're facing before you can get to the solutions. So I do that, and I lay it out. But, man, are there some positive, great ideas in this book that will change your life and change this country.
And that's so true. And I'm really glad that we began focusing on that. But I want to conclude with this one final question, because we want people to buy the book. We want people to understand the facts and read the solutions. But, Wayne, from your point of view, you take an average person, a worker, a business owner, it doesn't matter, that reads your book. What would you want them to do next? What action step?
Well, I mean, that's what my book's about. I want to spill 100% of the beans, Steve. But the book shows you what action to take. A constitutional convention of the states is one of the things in my book. How you win elections on the local, state, and federal level is in the book. How you support the right candidates is in the book. How you find the right candidates is in the book. How you train the right candidates is in the book. How you yourself save your family, I think, breaks down to gold for financial safety, vitamins so you're healthy, and I actually have an entire section of the book written by the world vitamin expert Wayne Gorsuch, not Wade Root, me, but actually Wayne Gorsuch. We colored the chapter a different color so you'd see what chapter he wrote. It was 100% his ideas for the 10 vitamins that will supercharge your life and make you the highest energy and the healthiest you've ever been, like me. And so you never need Obamacare. You don't need a doctor. Therefore, you avoid the system. And we teach you about homeschooling, where my daughter never went to school, and she wound up at Harvard graduating magna cum laude, now accepted for her master's degree at Cambridge University, the best colleges in the world, through homeschooling. So I teach you some ideas for you, the individual, for the Republican Party, for the U.S. economy, the national income tax vacation, and the middle-class contract with America. It's all there, Steve, how to turn around this country and make us the greatest in the world again.
Wayne, it's fantastic talking with you. We used to do this every month. We'll have to talk about doing that again.
Thanks, Steve. Hey, Steve, I got to run. I got a national radio interview. Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you. Bye. All right, so there you have it. Wayne Allen Root, thanks for your time. Thanks for your interest. Go to Amazon.com, buy the book, and develop your own game plan. That's how we change America. Thank you for being on the call. Thank you for listening to the recording. This is Steve Pollack, and have a great, great day, and make it productive, and see you again on another call.